Hey, it's 1140 The Bet. Adrian Hernandez here with Odyssey Sports 2. And for those watching on YouTube, if you're wondering why I have bags in my eyes, please relax. The Aces won the championship yesterday. Let's move on and get down to business. I've been looking forward to this interview for a while. Anna Wolf of Mississippi Today joins us, investigative reporter. So Anna, here in Vegas, we have politicians killing reporters that are saying things about them. Over there, you have old athletes from yesteryear stealing money from the government and the state. So first and foremost, thank you for joining us. And of course, we just get the big headlines. So I know that you've been working on this extensively. So when it comes to Brett Favre and everyone else and all these other celebrities and athletes that are involved, in totality, what are we talking about and what are we dealing with this situation and the welfare fraud case?
Sure. So this scheme has really been unfolding for the last 2 years, starting with six arrests back in 2020. When the first folks who were arrested, when that indictment came down, we noticed that there was a company that had received $2 million in stolen welfare funds, and the company was developing a concussion treatment. And the company is called Prevacus, and we were able to tie initially that company back to Brett Favre. Brett Favre had been investing in that company and was going around trying to get support for it from state leaders, trying to get funds, public funds invested into the company. And so that was kind of our first clue that Brett Favre had something to do with welfare spending in Mississippi. Since then, there's just been kind of a trickle of information coming out over the last 2 years. We learned that $5 million went to build a volleyball stadium at the campus at University of Southern Mississippi, Brett Favre's alma mater, and where his daughter was playing volleyball at the time. So we knew, and then we found out that Brett Favre himself had received another $1 million from the welfare program under sort of a promotional gig to deliver speeches and cut ads for the welfare program, essentially advertising to people in poverty, you know, where they could get services. And so it wasn't here until recently that we learned sort of more about his communication with these welfare officials and how he was able to influence them to putting money into his pet projects. And that's kind of where we are today.
I love how this story just got so much slimier for me that it starts with a concussion company, in theory, helping in the health of former football players. So just to clarify, we're talking about, in totality with everyone, about $77 million that were misspent, quote unquote. So that's correct. And then the one thing I want to know from you and the team and everyone who's been working on this, because like you said, this has been something that is, it's first off, it's still going on. Secondly, you guys have been working on this for years. So I just want to know how extensive the efforts have been to kind of cover this story and unpack some of these things that were hidden and not found out.
Yeah, I'd say over the past 2.5 years or so, I've probably spent like half of my time at this job on this one story. It is so massive. It has ensnared so many different players in the state, including officials, but also different famous athletes. And we're talking about a trail of $77 million, just trying to get our arms around how all that money was spent, who all benefited from it. I mean, I think there's still so much that we don't know about what happened and who was responsible for it. But the biggest question this whole time has been, you know, what was the former governor's responsibility? What was his role in the spending of these funds? Because he oversaw the welfare department that was administering these funds. The department is the Department of Human Services. And that that state agency was pushing out all of this money, tens of millions of federal welfare funds, to two nonprofits, where essentially those two nonprofits became kind of a black hole for information. So once the money hit that nonprofit, they could push that money out and none of that information was coming back to the state agency. There weren't public records around how much money was being spent and on what. And so it has really been, you know, just a huge effort of ours to try to track those funds where, you know, there isn't a lot of good public documentation to substantiate what was done.
I'm kind of curious, something that I want to know personally is kind of What are the landmines and legalities of putting this in the paper and the back and forth? Because obviously you don't want to be held liable and things like that. Like how big of a problem was that throughout this process?
We've certainly had attorneys in our corner to kind of check up on our work and make sure that, you know, we weren't putting ourselves at risk. But, you know, everything, pretty much everything that we've published, everything that has become sort of a big headline, you know, nationally, has been based on records. So text message records. And, you know, I think one thing that people have really appreciated about the reporting is being able to read, you know, you're reading the people's words as they wrote them. So yeah, you can kind of decide for yourselves what intentions they had and how they were thinking about what they were doing. You know, there was a text message that Brett Favre sent to Nancy New at one point. They were trying to get money to go to this volleyball stadium, right? And they had a meeting with welfare officials where the welfare agency director verbally committed $4 million right at the outset to building this volleyball stadium. But they knew that the volleyball stadium construction was going to cost more than that. So Brett Favre came up with the idea that, oh, well, you could pay me under an advertising contract. That's legal. And then I can just like cut a few ads for you and we can put that money in the volleyball stadium. But at one point, he texted this nonprofit founder who was administering the money. Her name was Nancy New. He texted her and said, if you give me this money, is there any way that the media can find out how much and where it came from? And that text just came out last week. And I think that has really put, you know, the national spotlight on this story, because it's so, it just shows so much of that intentionality, right? It kind of illustrates how
they were. Caught in 4K.
Yeah, they, well, and it's like, they kind of shows how they were operating in secrecy. If you have to operate in secrecy, what are you doing?
Yeah, 100%. But then it's also like, were you operating in secrecy? Because why would you talk about this through a text message?
That's true too.
And so it leads me into my next question. And you even brought it up here earlier with the situation with the speeches. It actually never happened, but it was basically just, we're going to say that you're getting the speeches so that you can get this money. But throughout this process, I mean, even on your Twitter a couple minutes ago, you talked about how the state of Mississippi spent, what was it, $160,000 at Twin Peaks, the restaurant, over the past 2 years. So as you found out all this information and the craziness of it, what's been the one thing that's been the most baffling or in the terms of incompetence and what's been going on?
There's so much, but, you know, I guess I would point out that there was a scenario where the welfare director was pushing out money to some individuals that he had become really close with, the DiBiase family. So Ted DiBiase is this former WWE wrestler. Actually, his name, you know, they're like villains in the WWE, I think.
I have a question waiting. I'm a huge fan, so thank you. This is perfect. Please go on.
I don't know if you know this, but Ted DiBiase, the Million Dollar Man, when he left the WWE, he got into Christian ministry. So he founded this ministry called Heart of David. Oh, you do know. Okay.
No. I'm just saying. The theory of leaving wrestling to go straight into being a preacher. You got to love it. Continue.
Yeah,
I'm sorry.
Right. No, right. So yeah, I guess that's pretty classic. But so here in Mississippi, he really capitalized on that. You know, we're in the Bible Belt here. And so it's kind of a juxtaposition, you know, this big, you know, he was mean in the WWE, but then he kind of, I guess, turned his life around and became this Christian minister. Anyway, his family received over $5 million from the welfare program for different programming that they purported to be administering. And one of the things that they were doing was his son, Teddy DiBiase, was going around the state delivering basically like self-help courses, motivational kind of conferences to state employees across the state. And that stuff's really just super interesting to me, because I think it just illustrates, you know, they were spending welfare money essentially to tell people to, you know, do better, to try to like preach a change in their life. And it's very like pull up your bootstraps mentality, but they were spending millions of dollars to deliver these messages. And the Department of Human Services director actually went to Congress while all this was happening, right before he was eventually ousted. He went to Congress and testified to how well Mississippi's social safety net program was operating. And he told them that he was delivering these courses. And so you kind of see where some of this was really happening in broad daylight. You know, I mean, they were talking about this stuff to Congress members who were basically just taking John Davis's word for it, saying, that sounds great. You know, good job. I'm glad that people aren't getting welfare because, you know, they don't need public assistance because they're being, raised out of poverty by being preached to.
This is absolutely unbelievable. Anna Wolf joining us here on 1140 The Bet. And one thing I want to ask you, and I guess I'm just thinking out loud, is as I take a step back, like to me, and I use shenanigans, I don't use it lightly because this is very serious and it's kind of sickening that they're taking money away from the poorest people in the state, in the poorest state in the country. But there's always quote unquote political shenanigans. The only difference is to me that I see is that when you have Brett Favre, when you had Ted DiBiase, you have people of stature, you have celebrities, you have athletes that all these people know. So is this a situation where most of the people in state are like forgiving because they appreciate and they admire them so much? Or is it a positive thing in terms of because these people have stature, the country is paying attention when they hear Brett Favre is doing what he's doing?
That's a really good question. We definitely exalt celebrity in this state. I mean, I don't know that that's unique, but we produce really great athletes. And it's one of the things that we do well when we don't here in Mississippi do well in many other things. I think that this story has really, people have been able to come together about this story and about how sort of sickening it is. I don't think people are, you know, happy about this money going to these people, especially money that was supposed to help the poorest residents in the state rise out of poverty. But it is interesting that, you know, these names have caused this to become a national story. I wonder if, you know, it would be so well told nationally if Brett Favre wasn't a player here, when in reality, the money could have gone to anyone. It could have gone to any Blow Joe, you know, to do the same thing. And it wouldn't have made a difference for the people in poverty who are not served. So the money wasn't going to the people who needed it regardless. And the fact that it went to Brett Favre's pet projects just means that it became a more national story. So frankly, I started reporting on this fund long before the scandal broke, just trying to figure out what the state was doing to help people in poverty. And it's kind of interesting that it blew up as such a story. I don't know that it would have gone like that if those big names hadn't been involved.
And just to clarify, when it comes to Brett Favre and some of the reporting that you guys have done, do I have this correct that 2 years ago the FBI talked to Brett Favre, but they simply just asked him one question and it had nothing to do pertaining to any of these issues?
That's right. So when the auditor started investigating this back in 2020, they did sit down with Brett Favre at one point. And according to his attorney, during that meeting, they asked if the FBI could come along. And so it wasn't like so much, you know, an FBI interrogation. It was more like them sitting in on the auditor's interview. And they apparently asked him, according to his attorney, if he had ever been to Tupelo. That was like the one question that Brett remembers them asking. Now, in his contract, he was slated to speak at different events. Not that those events were scheduled, but just the contract described some things that he might attend, right? And one of those examples was these rallies for high school students that they were putting on across the state. And one of those rallies took place in Tupelo. So the assumption is that they were trying to see if he had attended that event. And there is some, I think the whole headline about him getting paid $1 million for speeches he never gave is kind of a red herring. It's kind of a distraction from this larger issue because, you know, he's going to say that he was never slated to attend any events. And I think the contract that they are using to make that allegation is pretty thin. It like almost looks like a completely forged document to me. So,
and also super vague, right? I would assume.
Like, so vague, yeah. Yeah, it was like he'll attend events, you know, if his schedule allows. So I don't know how he can really be bound to that or be, you know, found to have been paid for something he didn't do. But that's like not, that's like beside the point, right? I mean, he was paid this money for the volleyball stadium. The speeches were just essentially a pretext for getting more money there.
I'm just, as you're talking and bring up the arena for the school, obviously, because his daughter attended, and I didn't plan on asking this, but I'm wondering, has Southern Mississippi itself like felt backlash, or is this, they're just like, you want to build the stadium? Cool. We have nothing to do with it.
I think that is kind of the tack that they've taken. You know, the money actually went to the Athletic Foundation, which is a separate entity from the university. And so I think they have like a little bit of padding there, but they haven't really been very responsive or wanted to discuss this publicly at all. The university did send a letter to the auditor in the beginning, just kind of trying to reject the auditor's narrative that Southern Miss was, you know, knowledgeable or had anything to do with taking welfare money. But the meeting minutes from the IHL, which is the Institutes for Higher Learning, that's the body that approves these kinds of things at universities, it said right in there that they were using money from a DHS block grant. So I think that, you know, as this goes on, if that volleyball stadium expenditure is really probed and officials really try to get to the bottom of it, that it's going to ensnare a lot more people than have been, you know, held accountable so far.
And Ann, before we get you out of here, final question. And I do want to reiterate for people listening and people watching that, like you said, we're talking to you here in Las Vegas and people across the country and ESPN and all these national outlets because of the names, Ted DiBiase, Brett Favre, and others. And there's a lot more important things in stake other than what these celebrities are doing and being slimy. But in your opinion, how is this going to play out in terms of figuring out and punishments and trying to make sure that this money is going towards the people that need it the most?
Right. So this civil suit that the state is bringing, it's attempting to claw back around $24 million of what was misspent from 38 people or companies. You know, I think most people who know anything about how civil suits work realize that they're not going to be successful at, you know, clawing back $19 million, for example, from this nonprofit that has essentially dissolved, and Nancy New, who doesn't have $19 million to give back to the state. So it's a little futile from that perspective, but there is this ongoing FBI investigation. And for example, the guilty plea that Nancy New's son pled guilty to, he admitted to defrauding the government by taking this $5 million and putting it into the volleyball stadium and disguising it. You know, they called it a lease agreement. They said they were going to use the property to provide programming to people in poverty. And he's already admitted to a crime there. And that that line in the guilty plea says that he worked with John Davis and others in order to perpetuate this scheme. And so I think that we're going to see, as the FBI investigation continues, if those others are going to eventually be named and held accountable.
This story is absolutely incredible for you and the team over there. We thank you for what you guys are doing. We look forward to the continued work, because this is not over by any means. But thank you so much for the time, and Wolf joining us. Have a wonderful night.
Thank you.
Awesome. Thank you. You're the best. That was incredible. And that was awesome. I'm going to have this out. This is going to air later tonight. And then I'm going to have the video and the podcast and everything out tomorrow. And I'm going to tag you and everything. So thank you so much. I appreciate the time.
Thank you. I appreciate you.
Awesome. Bye. Okay.
Have a good night. Bye.
You too.